love this song. As I wear my Boston Red Sox hat, I hope they sign that dude from the Tigers. He's good. Anyway, as we're recording this, I just got a news thing here that the first crack in that the test for the birthright citizenship, a judge in Seattle signed a temporary restraining order blocking the executive order on birthright citizenship. So here we go. You were talking about, you were at the RNC, Mr. Dan Schaefer here, political editor for Civic Media, the chief grand poobah of the recombobulation area.
Yeah, so I was talking about the immediate aftermath of the Joe Biden's debate.
I was at
the RNC in Milwaukee, covering the convention there, talking to lots of folks, and it just, you know, it just felt like Republicans were just spiking the football.
Oh yeah,
like they thought this was over.
Yeah.
And I think it just, you know, people were just kind of scoffing at any, you know, anything about Joe Biden. And then, you know, there was a lot of us, you know, kind of like in Wisconsin media, in, you know, the kind of like left of center media that made its way into the RNC, like myself, you know, just having these conversations about like, what's going to happen next? And is Biden going to continue to be the candidate? And there were so many of the like kind of Democratic politicians like in and around Milwaukee, Cavalier Johnson, David Crowley, folks like that who were going to bat for Joe Biden and talking about how he's the candidate. And it just it was really frustrating from my standpoint and saying just like this clearly isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So why are you tying yourselves to this unpopular candidate who is clearly not fit to do this for another 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it just, the way that, you know, I was writing about this with Biden at the time after that Madison rally and whatever else, it was just, there was so many people on the left who were saying that like, the media is making too big of a deal out of this and whatever it might be. And it's just, I don't think that was the case.
No,
I don't think he was up to the task to run in that campaign. And even, you know, comments from Biden, even within the last few weeks, alluding to the fact, oh, he thinks he still could have won.
Yes.
I think that is absolute BS. I think the way, you know, the switch to Harris, obviously didn't work for the presidency, but I think there are a number of Senate races that go towards Republicans. I think Eric Hovde would have beat Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin had Joe Biden remained on the ticket.
Yep.
I think if you look at close races in, you know, Arizona and Nevada and Michigan, some of these other places that had really close Senate races go the Democrats' way, I think Republicans would have won those races too. And I think it would have been an out and out landslide in the House for Republicans. And now they have, you know, a slim majority. I think down ballot too. I think, you know, some of the polling type numbers that I've heard about from like state Senate races and state assembly races when Biden was still on the ticket, they're going door to door trying to make the case that, hey, okay, well, Biden's old and unpopular, but I'm not, you know,
right.
I'm different. I'm at the bottom of the ticket. And I think it just was not going to work. And I think instead of like the kind of 18 to 15 breakdown we're seeing in the Wisconsin state Senate now, I think the Republicans would have been close to a supermajority again.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been just an absolute down ballot bloodbath for Democrats had the switch not been made. So I think that's why I think people are not as frustrated with, you know, Kamala Harris and the race that she ran, because I think we were going from a standpoint where with Joe Biden, I think there was a next to zero chance after
lambs
that
to the slaughter,
that,
I think
that he was going to win, that Democrats were going to, you know, win control of the House or anything like that, to giving Democrats a fighting chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, there are aspects of her campaign that I disagreed with that maybe didn't go well. But I think you have to, you know, I'm kind of giving her the benefit of the doubt on some of this, because it was a 107-day campaign where they were running to begin with a next to 0% chance of winning.
Well, and that's the question that I think we really have to focus on, because we could look at the, you know, oh my gosh, well, you know, the message was wrong here. Well, I really don't know that it was. It's just she had 107 days to make that case.
I do think that she did not go far enough to really articulate how she would be a different president than Biden.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah.
Because I think, you know, there was that interview, I think it was on The View or something like that, where she said, they asked, like, what would you do differently? And she said, I don't know if there's anything that I would do all that differently. And I think she just didn't put enough distance between herself and Biden. And I think that was maybe the biggest mistake of the campaign, is to not really point to some sort of new direction. And it was, you know, we're talking about the new way forward and we're not going back and all of that. I think she had the opportunity to say, we're going to do things a little bit differently, with a Harris presidency than the Biden presidency, but she just tied herself to Biden, who was just this anchor. And then, like, right at the end of the campaign, he makes that nonsense comment about, you know, the Trump supporters are garbage, or just however that was interpreted. And then Trump rolls into Green Bay in the garbage truck all of that. And it just becomes this really simple, easy rallying cry. And it's just like, thanks again, Joe.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, I think there are a lot of people on the left, again, who I agree with in a lot of ways, who are talking about, like, the achievements that Biden made and talking about his presidency. I think the last few months of his presidency have to be seen as a failure, because he did not accomplish his main objective, was to stop Donald Trump from returning to the White House.
He failed,
which, you know, he did in 2020, but he didn't do this year. And I think, you know, there's this quote that I like about the legacies of leaders, where people are remembered by the sum of their accomplishments, but defined by their singular failure. Mm-hmm. And Joe Biden's singular failure came in the 2024 election. He's, you know, he has a 50 years in public service that he's going to be remembered for in this country, as the vice president, as the president, as a longtime leader in the Senate. But his defining failure, you know, happened within the last year here.
Because he was the guy that brought Donald Trump back.
He was the guy that brought Donald Trump back. And I think I have a lot of, you know, when I think about Joe Biden's presidency, it's a really, really frustrating final few months. And then, you know, we can talk about the pardons, some of the other actions that he took in the final stretch there that I just thought were absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it was surreal because that day I was texting with someone who received a pardon.
Yeah. Okay.
And I asked him, I was like, did you know about this? He's like, dude, I slept in. I woke up to my phone exploding and telling me that I didn't want one. I didn't want one because I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. And it's not a Biden family member, it was a member of the January 6th committee. And he said that he had no idea that it was coming. He didn't want one. And he's like, I welcomed that fight.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's so, like, it is frustrating because I have so much respect for Biden, but I see a little bit of that Ron Johnson, you know, hey, I believe in term limits. I'm only going to be here for two terms. And there he is. And here's Joe Biden. I'm the transitionary candidate. And we're going to, you know, pass the torch and all of that. And if I think he did that, my God, you know.
And it's one thing to do that. And it's one thing to do that on its face. But when you have built your reputation on honesty and integrity and being a person of character, that's when the house of cards starts to really, really fall apart. And I think that is kind of what I was getting at about that credibility problem that he just has continued to make worse. Yeah. You know, you can play the clips of him saying he's not going to pardon his family members. Yeah. He's not going to pardon Hunter. He's not going to pardon, you know, members, preemptive pardons about like Fauci or Liz Cheney or whoever it might be. And then he just goes ahead and does it on his way out the door. I thought it was a really shameful final act for Joe Biden as president.
I don't necessarily mind, you know, Fauci and even though they didn't want it, the January 6th committee, I don't mind that because they did all of the right things, and it doesn't matter with that crowd. It doesn't matter with Donald Trump, as you've seen him take away protections from, you know, his national security advisor and Pompeo and all of that, even though they have like death threats from Iran. And here's, you know, we'll pull your, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter with that guy. And that's why it's like, okay, so going forward, what's the message? I mean, you hate to say that they're two are related, but Tony Evers, I mean, you know, he's part of that party. He's part of the loss of credibility. What does he do? How does he come, you know, back from this? What about someone who wants to run for a federal office? I mean, up and down the board, they're going to have to address some of these things and address, you know, because I had a meeting with someone that was like, oh, well, Democrats, and we got to work on economics. We have to have this message and that message, and we got to, and it's like, hey, hold on. And then we can't talk about Trump. We can't always talk about Trump. And it's like, at the federal level, I really believe that it's about decency. It is about decency. And I don't think you really can miss on economics, because other than this election, the Democrats economically were pretty darn good. And people bought into that, from union workers to minorities to, you know, middle income folks. They believed it. We just got away from it.
But Trump won the working class.
I know,
in this
right.
election.
Right.
And just like the Trump, you know, won with a lot of the voters that Democrats had historically been strong
with.
And maybe this changes, but I think it's wild that, like, you know, Donald Trump, who lived his life in a gilded tower right. in New York City,
he knows their struggle.
Is the man of the working class. Right. So I think that is part of the problem that Democrats that face.
How do they get
but
that
I
back?
Think, you know, you take a look at the inauguration, like, you have all of the, like, the richest
yes,
people in human
right.
history in front of, you know, even seated in front of Trump's cabinet appointees.
Right.
Like, that's a pretty easy message
right.
for Democrats to look at and say, like, you know, he's siding, you know, with the wealthy. He may campaign as this populist change agent, or, you know, going to do things differently, man of the working class type stuff. But when he gets in office, it's just catering to those types of folks, to Elon Musk and right. Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg, who he had in the front row for right. his inauguration. Like, I think there was also like the CEO of TikTok sitting
oh, yeah.
next to Tulsi
yeah.
Gabbard
yes.
and like whatever else it was. And so it's, you know, it's, I think that's a pretty easy message for Democrats to be able to run on going forward. And I think, you know, getting back to some of the bread and butter economic issues that Democrats have focused on. But I think you're right. I think because, you know, they're running as the incumbent party, it's hard to run, you know, as
yeah.
An individual of change. And you know, people didn't like what's happening, and it's, you know, they voted for change. I kind of wonder if we're entering this era now. We had a lot of two-term presidencies for a while in the country. I kind of wonder if we're going to get just kind of people upset with the status quo, upset with the system, and things are just going to kind of ping pong back and forth for a little while. Because, you know, because things are so gridlocked at the congressional level, and people are just kind of have this anti-incumbent energy across the country, because we're just not getting things done for the American people anymore. It's just not happening.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And we got a minute left here, but I, you know, what do the Democrats need to do to kind of get their place back?
Well, you said I've got a minute left for that, right?
So
we could go a whole nother hour.
Yeah.
You know, I think they got to change the way they talk to people. I think you got to stop having these kind of like very precious, safe, canned, inauthentic conversations and just talk to people again. And I think that's part of I think it's a media strategy as much as anything that needs to change for the Democrats.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. And yeah, I don't know. It really is an interesting time, and I agree with you on your ideas about what Biden did to the party. I don't know how. I said last week history will be kind to his legacy, and I think up until the last few months of his presidency, I think it will. But I do. Yeah, I agree that boy, it's complicated at the end there. Dan Schaefer, thank you so very much for joining us here on the Rational Revolution. We'll have you back in a couple weeks, I think, because we'll have more to talk about. I want to talk about the state stuff, too.
I know. We got so much state politics
Bro.
To talk about. It's a big year for that. So,
yes,
yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Do that. Thank you so much. We'll be back with my thoughts right after this.